My Year of Bad Sex, written and read by me, Jonathan Izard. Part 31. Nelson, the right-wing soldier who was into pegging and art curation, had no sooner left than my phone chirped. There was a message from Dean, the Chinese maths student I had spoken to when he was in China and later in the Midlands. It seemed he was in London now and was feeling lonely, wanting some company and asking if he could come over. "Oh, I've just finished giving someone a massage, Dean," I said. "I was just about to go to bed." "Oh, that's a shame. I was feeling horny." "Well..." I left the pause too long. He was one of the many, many guys who appeared online, talked dirty, came, disappeared for a long time, reappeared, and wanted to carry on from where we'd been before. I was curious to meet him, and I guessed he'd be low maintenance. "Well, I suppose you could come over." I gave him the address. I showered and straightened the duvet. When I met Dean in the street outside, it was just past midnight. He was, as I expected, sweet, not sexy. He came in. He only wanted hot water to drink. Our sofa talk went on for a long, long time, with brief moments of contact. He seemed to like my hands. Then we cuddled. It felt awkward and contrived, like two understudies having to take on the roles of the indisposed stars. It was time for bed. Dean had thoughtfully brought his toothbrush, so I didn't need to give him one of the 15 spare new ones I had in the bathroom cupboard. He came to bed with his boxer shorts on. I asked if they could come off. He removed them under the duvet with a wriggle and produced them like a naff magician with a dead pigeon before dropping them on the floor. I tried to kiss him. He didn't want that, only with dry, closed lips or on the cheek. His cock was bigger than I expected and hard as a rod, but his pubes were straight and long, unkempt and wild. I already knew this, as I'd seen them on one of our FaceTime calls. He told me about other people wanting him to trim them, but resisting their requests. As I saw the long black strands in reality, I wanted to add my own voice to the list of others begging for a coiffure. But, as with Julio, if he loved his straggly hair the way it was, who was I, etc., etc. Dean didn't seem very interested in my cock, apart from wanting it inside him, despite, as he put it, a problem with my, what is the word, intestine. "Intestine," I said. "Intestine." "Yes, intestine. It has been hurting." I suggested that in that case maybe we shouldn't attempt entry, but he was resolute. However, despite both our best efforts, he found it impossible. "Too big," he said, examining me with the air of a scientist assessing some aspect of a lab experiment. "Let me see. Yes, it is wide." He persisted, but several times he had to rush out to the bathroom, grabbing either one or both of his phones on the way. When he came back, I asked, "Is it an emergency?" "The intestine... No, it will be okay." "I meant you taking your phones with you." "Ah, yes, I see. That, it might be seen as bad manners." "It might," I said. After much shifting of position, effort and patience, encouragement and not a little discomfort, I was able to penetrate him. He enjoyed riding it. Finally, he got what he'd come for. It all felt soulless. We hadn't had a single laugh or even a smile since his arrival. We settled down to sleep. He pulled my arm over him like a blanket and cuddled backwards into my body. At last, this felt good. A warm body for a whole night. Like me, Dean was not a morning person. He was in no rush, so I had to chivvy him as I had an 11 a.m. appointment. Work, not sex work. He didn't hug instinctively, so I had to request it and explain why. He obeyed as if it were part of some contractual obligation. He left the flat with me and we parted in the street, going our separate ways. As he said goodbye and turned away, he was already checking his phone. One of them. Dean left in the morning. In the evening, Dean came round. No, not the same Dean. This was Dean 2, the young man at yoga whom I'd tentatively cruised a couple of weeks earlier. We'd had a chat after the class and I'd kept the text conversational plate spinning. The offered massage was the clincher. He'd never had one before. He arrived in his high-vis jacket and industrial boots straight from work, which was checking on various ambulance stations, as far as I understood it. I offered wine, but he asked for a herbal tea. There ensued quite a palaver about which one, lemon or peppermint or rosehip or chamomile. Then, was the spoon clean? Did I have honey? Was it crystallised? I gave him the brew and he went to sit down. As he did so, he put his mug on the glass table, but misjudged where the edge was, and the mug crashed to the floor, where it smashed and spilled scalding tea over the table, the floor, and his legs. I mopped up, reassuring him about the breakage, although the mug had been my favourite, and made him a fresh cup. He sipped this one and then declared, "I think I'd like that shower right now." And so he did. He took over 15 minutes in the bathroom. How can he take so long, I thought. Maybe he's douching or something. The intimate cleanliness regime of a conscientious bottom was beyond my sphere of knowledge, and would remain so for another few weeks yet. Dean emerged, wrapped in a towel. We sat for a while longer discussing his job and his family, and he finished his cool tea. But there was something odd about his body language. He sat ramrod upright, and wasn't even turned towards me, so I was conversing with his shoulder. At my instigation, we moved into the bedroom for the massage to begin. I commented on the fact that it felt a little uncomfortable, even though we'd seen each other bollock naked at yoga not long ago. My pointing this out didn't make it any less awkward. Once on my table, Dean began to relax. I paid him compliments on his back and fine bum. When my dick trailed against his hands, there was no response. I tried again. Same lack of interest. I gave him a third chance. Nothing. Back, shoulders, legs, soles. I turned him over. He was semi-aroused by the look of things. Scalp, face, chest, arms, legs, feet. And then I removed the final towel. His cock was hard and large, but savagely cut and with a kink near the end, like a pruned plant with new growth. I held his cock, caressed it, and cupped his balls. He didn't blink, flinch, or express anything. Was this welcome or not? I bent over and sucked him, first the kinky tip and then the rest of his gobstopper. But still no sign of encouragement, not a peep or a squeak or a tremor, no clues or hints. I pressed on, sucking and wanking him, assuming he did want to shoot and then shoot off. It was all rather odd. I ventured a finger between his thighs and found his butthole. Did he want that or not? He didn't resist, but then again, nor did he encourage. Finally, I got a slight response to my probing. Dean relaxed his legs and pushed back against me. I put my face close to his and whispered, "Do you want me inside you?" He gave the smallest squeak of assent, but cleansed of any excitement. "Let's move to the bed," I said. And we did. He positioned himself on all fours, presenting his gorgeous ass for the taking. I rimmed and sucked him for a long time. Still, there was no talking. But I began to give a selection of some of my best smutty phrases, and then checked once more. "Do you want my cock?" He nodded and spoke. "Condom." I got one and he watched me put it on. He had difficulty at first, so my tone was all encouragement and praise. Then, once relaxed, he turned around so he could ride it. He appeared, finally, to be getting into it, as I got into him. We tried a few positions. "Oh, Dean, I wish you could see this," I said. "It looks amazing." I was fishing for him to ask me to film it. He said nothing. I kept asking if he was all right as his grimacing and moaning signalled possible discomfort. We stuck to the action and soon I was coming inside him with my usual routine of cries and spasms and shudders, gripping him tight. I collapsed onto the bed next to Dean and we lay there for a long time. Still, there were no words. Then he was asleep, looking very peaceful, handsome too. A hint of someone, a young Paul Ince, if you know who that is. What a beautiful young man he was. Dean, too. I made some tea and had a cup. Then I gently woke him, telling him it was 11 and saying he was welcome to stay the night. He got up, washed, and came to have the cider I'd bought especially for him. Then he began a long and rambling discussion with himself about whether to take the company vehicle back to the base now or drive it home and return it to work in the morning. I smiled patiently and waited while he debated with himself. The offer to stay was there and was genuine, but in all honesty, I was ready for him to leave. He decided he would. He put on his high-vis gear and picked up the half-empty can of cider to take with him. At the door, I asked for a farewell hug and requested the text of a safe arrival, which, an hour later, I got. What a strange evening. Some lovely things, his colour, his cock, some disappointments, the shape and cut of his cock, the lacklustre involvement. But I hoped he'd enjoyed and not regretted coming over. I wondered if he'd even tell me if I asked. Of all my mad times and bad times over the year, the few hours with Dean II trouble me most. I confess to a level of discomfort about the experience, and uncertainty over the ethics, if you like. At each stage of the proceedings, from the initial looks and smiles at yoga, the talk after the class, the tea, massage, sex, playing it all back in my mind and checking my phone for the trail of texts, I wanted to believe I acted honourably and with consideration for Dean's well-being. But did I? Was there at any point a hint of coercion or unfair seduction, of my pursuing what I wanted and not allowing an alternative process? I can't find a point where I crossed a line from a shared experience to something inflicted for my own pleasure. Obviously, I didn't use physical force or verbal persuasion, but I did have inherent power, being older, more experienced, in charge of the massage process, and in my own home. Had that silent superiority been enough to foist my will on him? Did he feel obliged to go through with things he'd rather have said no to? He was so closed, so silent, that I struggled to know if he was on board. I hope he was, and I believe he was, but I don't have certainty. Without the expression of pleasure or displeasure, I was checking, guessing, judging and assessing throughout. I know I'm a man of integrity and virtue. I also know mistakes can be made. And I know my own experience of being abused. When I was raped, it was by a man who was more powerful than I was. He was older, more experienced, in charge of the photography process, and he was in his own home. Unlike Dean, I did try to resist. Unlike Dean, I was not compliant. Unlike Dean, I protested aloud. But the fact that parallels even cross my mind is bad enough. That I'm asking myself these questions is an indication that a whiff of regret lingers with me. Was there any word or any action that Dean would consider non-mutual, unilateral? If only he'd said more. No, that sounds like blaming the victim, if victim is the word. If only I had asked more, been open to sex not taking place at all. Tea, talk, massage, goodbye. Dean was withdrawn, almost absent from the proceedings. What was happening in his head? Did I fail to hear unspoken resistance and press ahead with my own agenda regardless? So many questions. Where do they leave me? Confused and disquieted, in a limbo of uncertainty. As I write this, many months after the event, I realise I need to contact Dean to ask him one simple question. Did you feel coerced by me? I must give him the power to release me from my guilt or brand me an abuser. And if he fails to reply, the stain of doubt will remain. I composed a message to Dean and then deleted it. I rewrote it in a different style, simpler and shorter. My thumb hovered over the send arrow for a long time. I pressed it, and the message went. Onto my screen came the message, not delivered. I pressed the arrow again, same result, and again, and again. Had he blocked me? Deleted me? Had he changed his number? I have no way of knowing. It's possible I'll see him at yoga again one day, although I doubt it. And so, that whisper of disquiet remains. The evening with Dean II had been odd, but not as odd in some ways as the meeting with another young man the following day. We'd had some conversations on Tinder for a few weeks and hit it off. His profile pictures showed a stunning face with extraordinary eyes and lashes that could seduce with a glance. He was curious about my life, wanting to know all about my work and home and sexual experience. He wanted more, pictures and even videos, solo videos and then me with other guys, remember? Yes, Jeremy. Or actually, as he'd told me, Marek. Jeremy was from a Bangladeshi family and lived in East London. He told me he'd had terrible health issues with his bones and his heart, and they had interrupted his education. He was, if you recall, in the process of applying to American universities, but he could always fall back on the offer of Cambridge. But it was said simply, without arrogance, no braggadocio. This was his world, his reality. I had offered a meeting with a massage if he fancied it. He wanted the meeting, but nothing else. We discussed the possibilities of where and when. It became clear this wasn't going to be simple. He lived with his family, wasn't out, and couldn't just leave home without giving a reason. I can say I'm going to the library to study. If it was a chat meeting without the massage, I suggested a cafe near him.
No, I can't do that. Someone from our community is bound to see me and tell my mother. Even if we met in central London or over in Ealing, some Pakistani woman would spot me. You don't understand what it's like.
I began to see how tough it was for him and how relatively easy it had always been for me. Jeremy couldn't talk on the phone as the use of mobiles was banned at home after 6 in the evening in order to encourage conversation. I rather liked the sound of that. He said that if he were to break the curfew, one of his brothers would hear and come into his bedroom, demanding to know who he was speaking to. Jeremy agreed to come to my place one afternoon, not for massage or lunch or anything other than to talk. He arrived bang on time, and I instantly saw the reality. His profile picture was accurate in regard to the colour and allure of his eyes, but it didn't show the diffidence and reserve. He refused my offer of lunch or a cup of tea. Even a glass of water was politely declined. He sat upright on the edge of my sofa, clutching his coat across his knees. He told me he'd been bullied at school by other pupils, but also, he said, by some teachers. The medication he took for his bone condition had led to him gaining a lot of weight, and he was embarrassed about his body. He also didn't like his voice, saying it was too high and feminine. I tried to assure him I found his voice sweet and gentle, but I did see what he meant. He wondered what he could do about that, and I said I'd have a word with a friend who's a vocal coach. Jeremy also said he wanted to set up a charity to help women in his community who were isolated and often controlled by men because they didn't have the same language and IT skills. He had great plans and ingenuity for his project, but wasn't sure where to begin. Again, I thought of people I could put him in touch with. A month later, I'd be happily helping him with his applications for Harvard and Yale, looking over his essays and suggesting some rewrites. Doing some rewrites. It was a genuine pleasure for me. Jeremy's family weren't in a position to do it, and his school fell short in support, so I was delighted to step into the breach. My only regret was that he never was accepted at the US universities. I hope my contributions didn't hold him back. I did my best, just as he did his. We only met face to face on that one occasion, but I can see Jeremy, Marek, coat on his knees, nervous but determined to overcome all hurdles to success. A fine young man, a remarkable young man. My year of bad sex wasn't all bad, and wasn't all about sex. I met some extraordinary, unexpected people via those apps. Jeremy will go on to achieve great things, and he might remember the old guy whose path he crossed one winter. I hope he does. Some of the men I met were very brief encounters. There was Chris, for example, who had a plump, cheeky face, and we arranged to meet. I'd invited him for a massage or to join me at a naked yoga class, but he laughed, thinking I was making it up. So it was to be a drink in Soho. After my lunch with Wai Lun, I half expected Chris to turn up in a ball gown or a miniskirt, but there he was, crossing the road towards me in sweatshirt and jeans with that boyish grin. He wasn't a boy, but a charming man in his mid-30s. He was originally from Bulgaria, but had worked in New York at quite a senior level in diplomatic circles. He'd also had a successful YouTube channel interviewing minor celebrities in his own country about luxury brands and cornering the market, because, as he said, nobody else was doing it. You know that moment when you meet someone on a date and at first you're not sure, and then the needle nudges past the midway point into the "I would" part? Well, that never happened with Chris. For me, or for him, I suspect. He was charming and witty and intelligent and all kinds of good things, but within the first few seconds of saying "hello" and "what would you like to drink" and "shall we sit here," the needle had settled way below the centre mark. I tried to reassess as our chat went on, adding "nice hair" and "very polite" to see if the needle moved. It did, but not far enough. Mind you, we don't have to fancy someone to fuck them, do we? If Chris had come to my place for a massage, I could happily have given him that treatment and then followed through with sex. But going to a bar for a drink, chatting for an hour, and then travelling by tube or taxi to mine and establishing a horny vibe before getting down and dirty, well, that took a whole different set of cojones, a level of commitment above the basic instinct. And with Chris, I was struggling to find that as we moved from the first beer to the second. And then he smiled. I mean, a different kind of smile from the one he'd presented in his online photos and across the table. The reason he'd looked cheeky and charming was that his eyes crinkled and he had a simpering kind of smirk with his lips pressed together.
My mum did the same thing when she was embarrassed about having dentures. Now, as Chris relaxed with the witty company, all right, the effect of the alcohol, he showed me a different smile, one where his lips parted and his teeth were on display. And that's when the needle slewed down to zero. Just off the centre of his mouth there were dead teeth, two of them. Black and grim, like unkempt tombstones in a Victorian graveyard, one upper, one lower. I knew in that second there was no way I was putting any part of my anatomy in that horror orifice. What was he thinking, offering himself in that condition? I felt cheated and pissed off, but also relieved, now that my response was unambiguous. There was no need to wrangle, my decision was clear. We finished our beers and agreed to leave. He must have also been making the same calculation about me and come to a similar conclusion, because there was no awkward dithering in the doorway, the shall we or shan't we dance, the hesitant, halting, tentative half-suggestion to avoid causing or feeling offence. Well, I suppose we'd better, unless, of course, which way are you, No, none of that. We left the bar and stood on the pavement. Thanks for the drink. You're welcome. It was nice to meet you. I'm heading this way to the tube, and I'm walking that way to the bus. Good luck with your job search. Thanks. And think about the YouTube option. Sure. Well, all the best. Cheers then. Bye. I think there was a perfunctory hug and almost certainly smiles. His was tight-lipped and winsome, but it was too late for cute. I'd looked into the dark abyss and knew the horrors that lay within. Whatever the reasons Chris had rejected me, they couldn't have been the same as mine. I'd recently spent £2,000 on straightening, whitening, and an implant, so I could smile without trying to look boyish. That was never going to work, was it? Mikos had good teeth. He had good everything. No, not quite everything. Let me explain. We met on Grindr. He was in his 30s, had a shaved head, and an impressive black beard. He was a doctor and lived around the corner from me. We swapped a few texts and moved swiftly, uncomplicatedly, from message to massage. Our first attempt at hooking up stalled when he said he would be on call. I didn't think it would be very relaxing for either of us to be having a massage or sex, with the possibility that he would have to take a call about orthopaedics, his specialism. We agreed to postpone to another day, a Saturday afternoon. He was a nice chap, very presentable, a brain, a sense of humour, and very clearly an adult. He was nervous, which surprised me. I don't expect doctors to have anxiety, thinking they're always the ones in control, taking charge and calling the shots. Well, not always. We moved from clothed chat to naked massage. Mikos had a great body, really well-defined muscles. It seemed we were both members of the same gym, but had never coincided there, and never would, as he went at 6 a.m, never the time of day I wanted to be heaving weights around. 10 p.m. for me. But his regime was clearly paying dividends. Each time I worked on one part of him, I thought, ooh, this is the best bit, only to rethink as I moved on. Chest, biceps, triceps, thighs, butt, calves, shoulders. A really fit specimen, and a pleasure to treat. When I asked if he had any injuries, he spoke like the medic he was. Left scapula, medial edge. I had to do a quick check. Scapula, kneecap? No, shoulder blade. Medial? Which side was that? I placed my hand where I thought he meant. That's it, just there, he said. As I moved around the table, he grabbed my cock when he could, and as I turned him over, prone to supine, thank you, we shared a lovely snog. After an hour, as the massage drew to a close, I sucked him, and we moved onto the bed for some lovely sex. Lovely, straightforward sex. No weird things like don't kiss, or be too gay, or I won't do this or that, and no instructions, here, there, now, stop. Just all the things I like to do and have done to me. That seemed to have been too much to ask in recent weeks. And then, when he climbed onto me and adjusted himself a little, I realised I was slipping inside him. No spit, no lube, no fuss. In I went, smooth and steady, cordially welcomed. It seemed so simple and natural. Just right. I fucked him until I came. He came too. Then we lay for a long time chatting about work, sex, life, men, sex, films, sex, and so on. Everything was relaxed, calm, refreshingly uncomplicated. How come this feeling had been so hard to capture for so long? Mikos said he had to go and meet a friend for lunch. My fag hag, he called her. Ooh, the first jarring note. I hate that expression and would never use it myself. But he gained points immediately after. When he said he'd be a bit late for his friend, I asked if he'd say why. "Oh, yes," he said. "I'll tell her I've been fucking with a hot guy." At the door, we had a hug and a little kiss. And I didn't have to prompt him. Hallelujah. He said, "We should meet again, maybe for dinner." "Oh, my God. You mean like a date with clothes on in public? No sex or even a massage? You weirdo." Actually, I did text Mikos during the week to say I hadn't forgotten him and hoped he hadn't picked up my cold germs. That, as it turned out, would be the least of our worries. That evening I went to a friend's concert. She's a violinist and was playing in an orchestra, Copland, Dvorak and Mozart. It was stunning. The music touched me in a way that only music can. I cried, of course. The next morning was the Naked Swimming Group. I had my usual list of invitees who had expressed interest. This week they were Misha, Shahid, Giuseppe and Tyrone. Nope, none of them turned up. However, Giuseppe wasn't entirely a time waster. He turned out to be quite a surprise package. My Year of Bad Sex is written and read by me, Jonathan Izard. Music and studio production are by Andy Mills. My Year of Bad Sex is a Protocol production.